Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Transitions, LLC. Our guest tonight is New York Times bestselling author Leslie Kane. And if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. We would also like to welcome our new business members, iGiveOn.com, The Giver's Marketplace, and Miracle Distribution Center. We would also like to welcome back one of our devoted business members, Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott. So, Bob, what's running around in your mind today?
Too much.
Want to back up a bit?
I'm all over the place. I was just reading, before the show, I was reading the biography of a future guest on Signs of Life Radio. And,
who is this?
I think Dr. Edward Close. And he is a bit of a genius, and he has, you know, many, many degrees. But what struck me unusual is that for a scientist and a mathematician, is that as a child he had out-of-body experiences, and he described, and this is what caught my eye, he said that he started speaking at a very early age. He said he was speaking complete sentences at 9 months old. And then he said as he got a little older, he didn't have to learn math or language, he just remembered them. And that got me thinking, you know. I mean, right away the first thing that comes to mind, if you're remembering them, is this, a case of reincarnation, you know, of a past life, that, you know, but also maybe he's accessing, you know, the information from, you know, an information field. So who knows what that means? And I started to think, when we say we know something, sometimes we know things from our learning and through logic and deduction and other things. But other times, there's no rhyme or reason to it. We just know it.
Right.
And that's kind of the same principle.
Right, know? But here you're talking about knowing something that every other single child growing up has to go to school and learn versus somebody who suddenly says, I don't know how, but I knew that. More like a fact or an incident. They suddenly know about it or they suddenly know what it is. But here is somebody saying they know the whole process of math. They know the whole process of vocabulary. It's a whole different ballgame, and it does speak loudly to reincarnation and maybe possible research into something deeper than just genetics as they know it today.
Yeah, past lives were the most logical thing to me, but just because of that word, you know, remembering it, you know, if you were choosing
right.
information.
But you also said that he had out-of-body experiences. Maybe in those out-of-body experiences he went and fetched
That's also a plausible explanation, right? If you go out-of-body, you're traveling to another realm, another dimension, and you're bringing back that information. Hence, I remembered it. Yeah, you remembered it because you went and you retrieved it.
Mm.
So, well, we'll learn more when we talk to him, of course. You know.
Of course.
The other thing that popped into my mind today as I was driving around, and it was following up on a discussion I think we had a couple of nights ago, and that is how people in the general public perceive mediums. I've certainly found, and I'm sure you'll agree, that a great many people just think that a medium is somebody that can speak to the dead, and all mediums are the same. You know, it doesn't matter. Then, you know, they're not interested, whether they don't even ponder, you know, the qualifications of the medium. You know, they're just, the medium's a medium. If you can either talk to the dead or you don't.
Right.
They don't realize that there are different types of mediums. They don't realize that mediums get information at different times, and they don't realize that some information has nothing to do with talking to the dead, you know, it's psychic. So you agree, I'm sure.
Right. And the other thing that's not considered is the fact that everybody on some level can learn how to do that. So, you know, like playing the piano, I can take piano lessons and I can maybe play the piano lousy or even really, really good, but it doesn't matter how many lessons or how much time and energy I devote to it, I'm not going to Carnegie Hall with my piano talents. So it's the same thing. Everybody can open up to this separation from the physical world of your mind so that you can allow communication to come through. And I think most of us kind of do it naturally when we're first falling asleep and when we're first waking up in the morning. And that commonly is when people claim to have their dream visits, because they're allowing spirit to come in, or they're opening up for spirit to come in. So I think that's something that the masses don't even consider, all of this information about communicating with the dead. You're right. It's either you're a medium and you communicate with the dead, or you're not a medium, and anytime you need to communicate with it, you have to go find yourself a medium.
Yeah, well, I wasn't even thinking in those terms, but if you're, I mean, whenever I question these things, I go back to the way I used to think, you know, before I even knew what a medium was, and then when I found out what it was, I had the same perception. So, okay, if you're somebody that could talk to the dead, it's sort of...
Well, you would kind of like prove it to me.
It doesn't matter what medium I go to, you know, they're all the same, you know. And then, boy, I had a rude awakening, but of course, it's part of our job, a part of what we try to do is educate the people about the different types of mediumship and how, you know, certain mediums can get information at a much higher degree of accuracy than others.
Right, and I think the other common conversation that's out there between people is the quantification of a medium. Like if Mary goes to a medium and she has a fabulous reading, she's going to recommend that medium to somebody else. It doesn't necessarily mean the other person's going to have a fabulous reading.
Right.
So there's all of this misinformation that's out there that just comes from people just chatting about it. And I think that feeds into the dilemma as well, because then you have people, let's say Mary's the only one that had a great reading with that particular medium, and everybody else had stinky ones. Then you start the thing with, it couldn't possibly be true, and now the art of mediumship becomes something tainted.
And I know we're going to go to a break, but speaking of mediums, I know that you wanted to mention that there's only, I think, a week left on that early bird rate on the retreat.
Yeah, just about. March 31st is the last date for the early bird special to reserve your seats for the grief retreat. And so if you want to save yourself some money, that's the time to make your reservation.
And you can find out more about who's going to be there by logging on.
I'll talk about it
website.
Later on.
Okay. We're going to go to a break because we have a fabulous guest tonight, Leslie Cain, with a great new book called Surviving Death. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes with Leslie.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is New York Times bestselling author Leslie Kane. Our sponsor is Transitions LLC. Bob?
And it's our pleasure to welcome back Leslie Kane. She's an independent investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. She's been featured on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and the Colbert Report and NPR and other media such as USA Today, U.S. News, and World Report. She's written articles for the Huffington Post since 2012. She's contributed articles to dozens of other publications. And her new book is what we're going to talk about tonight, Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. And before I forget, the website that you can go on is survivingdeathkane.com. And I'll point out that Kane is spelled K-E-A-N, so that's survivingdeathkane.com. Welcome, Leslie.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Fran. It's great to be with you both.
And it's our pleasure. So I mentioned your previous book, which was an investigation of evidence for UFOs, and the new book, which tackles evidence of an afterlife. Leslie, you like challenges, don't you?
Yeah, I like the big questions, you
right.
know, the big mysteries that are unsolved and probably never will be solved, but that are very provocative and, you know, affect our lives and have a lot of meaning to them. And also issues that challenge the scientific status quo. That I really do enjoy. I mean, I because the scientists are so close-minded about looking into some of these topics, and I like to collect enough evidence to be able to say to them, hey, what do you, you know, you can't deny this is real. They probably will anyway, but nonetheless, I like to bring that out, you know, bring that forward so that they're challenged, and it, this information really challenges the paradigm that the scientists are, a materialistic paradigm. So I find that really interesting to do.
Yeah, I wonder what's going to be next. You've already tackled two of the biggest questions there are, so I don't think
there's anything left after this. Well, my hands are full anyway because I've got a lot more to learn. So I don't, you know, I'm not looking to do anything else right now.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I mean, you, of course, you have a lot more to learn. So do all the researchers in the field, and you've done an excellent job in the book of bringing forth, you know, the evidence that you. That you discovered along the way. But another interesting thing is that as you were talking to the scientists and the research and the medical doctors, lo and behold, you had a few personal experiences of your own that popped up. And was that surprising, or do you think that you somehow open yourself up to them by uncovering, you know, some of the evidence that you weren't aware of before?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising, to tell you the truth. I never would have expected the level of, you know, experience that I did have. I mean, I certainly had every intention when I started to sit with some mediums, some mental mediums. I mean, that was the only aspect of all of what I've got in that book that I sort of knew in advance that I was going to do. So, because anybody can do that. The two readings I did with mental mediums were as extraordinary as they were, was, you know, beyond my expectation. And then I ended up having these after-death communications, which I never expected to have. And then I ended up sitting with a physical medium, which was extraordinary. So it just all seemed to come together during the time I was working on the book, and I was very focused on, you know, opening up myself to these, allowing these things to happen in a certain sense. I mean, I don't want to sound too New Agey here, but I was certainly in a mindset of a real earnest expectation and desire for these, for some things to happen, and they did.
Yeah, and I realize, you know, trying to put myself in your shoes. I mean, you're a serious, well-trained investigative reporter, so you know that you must have. There must have been some hesitation on your part. You said, whoa, you know, one thing that you're trained to do is you don't include your personal experiences. But, you know, in this case, not to would be a disservice. It's part of the investigation, the way I see it. I mean, did you have hesitation?
Yeah, I had very big reservations. And you're spot on in your sensitivity to that, because I had to think a lot about whether to include some of this stuff, because it was very personal. And as you say, you know, is it journalistic to do that? But when I thought about it, I realized, just as you said, Bob, that this was part of my journey with this material. And it was so integrated into the whole research, you know, to everything that I was doing to investigate this topic, that if I left it out, it wouldn't be honest, basically.
Right.
So, you know, because how can you write about mental mediumship without including your own experiences with testing it? I mean, when I did my first mental mediumship reading, which was with Laura Lynn Jackson and was absolutely a life-changing thing for me, I sort of saw it as this, what I call a personal experiment in my book. I mean, I was approaching it, you know, as a test. You know, well, let's see what she can do, right? But I also let go in the moments in which these things were happening, and in the days leading up to it, I completely let go into the what I think is a receptive kind of energy, you know, a state which would allow the energies to be best served by the state of mind. And I wasn't just sitting there as a journalist, you know, and keeping a distance from it. I really allowed myself to let go and experience the reading in a way that any sitter should do, realizing that because I was taping it, I could do my analysis afterwards. So I felt I was really able to kind of synthesize both elements of it, the personal experience and the analytical. And I don't know, you've read the book, but I did my best to sort of to have both elements going at the same time, and so that I didn't lose my objectivity through that process, but I also felt like the experiences were really an important part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you did a masterful job in presenting both sides. I mean, you interviewed several people who gave the counter arguments, and you weighed the evidence on both sides. But you made me think. You saw two mediums, I think, relatively early in your research, and I wondered. I mean, let's say that you mentioned you had an extraordinary reading with Laura Lynn Jackson. But let's say that you went to Laura Lynn and you had, just a horrible reading, where nothing made any sense at all. And you went to, and I know that you had an extraordinary reading with another medium. So if those two readings were not as evidential as they were, do you think that the course of events may have changed, that your research may have been somehow affected by your experience?
It's such an interesting question, Bob, because, what if I had done six readings and they were all terrible?
Right.
I mean, what would I have said? I just don't know. It's a really, you ask just great questions because you're somebody who understands what this is all about, and I've never even been asked that or even really thought about it. But I have thought about how, what a gift it is that I was able to have these. I mean, these readings really happened exactly as I wrote about them. There's no exaggeration. And they were like probably 85 to 90% accurate, with lots and lots and lots of specific details. So I think the fact that that happened is sort of extraordinary. Because,
yeah, well, some might say that it was meant to be that way.
Well, I can tell you, a lot of people have told me that.
Right.
And who knows? But, yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting thing because I certainly have read enough about mental mediumship to know that it works, at least with certain mediums. And so if they had all been horrible for me, I don't know what I would have done, because it doesn't make for a very interesting book either.
Right.
to have to report on all these lousy readings. So
yeah.
Somebody was making it work for me. What can I say? It just was
so
miraculous. And the fact that I asked my two, I don't know what you call the people on the other side, but asked them to repeat, as I describe in the book, to repeat something very specific in the second reading that they had said in the first one, and that actually happened. All the things just seemed to fall into place. Mm. In such a beautiful way. So I don't know what would have happened if the readings had been terrible.
Right. Well, we don't know. I just thought it would be, it was interesting the way that played out. Now the book, of course, you go into many areas of research. You go into near-death experiences and deathbed visions and mental and physical mediumship, reincarnation, et cetera. And you talk to a lot of the heavy hitters, in this field. I think I counted five of them that contributed to the book are on Forever Family Foundation's board, so that we know you got good people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful, and I'm grateful to you for the help I got from you, too. But, yeah, these people actually wrote original chapters for the book. I didn't just talk to them. It's sort of like the UFO book. I invited people to write their own chapters. There's 10 chapters
right.
written by other people, and I think they add so much to the book.
So you've probably been asked this before, but I'll ask it anyways. Having delved into all of these areas of study, is there one particular discipline of research that you feel presents the most compelling argument for life after death? I mean, if you could pick one?
Oh, it's so hard to pick one. I mean, I think that the cases of very young children, and I don't think we need to talk about that a lot because I think your audience is probably really familiar with them from Jim Tucker's work, et cetera. But the cases of very, very young children who have lots of specific memories and then they have a past life and then they're proven to be accurate, the person is located. I mean, those cases to me are very compelling, although we can't prove that they're a past life. But they're compelling, and I don't know what to make of. I mean, throughout the book, I'm always looking at the psi argument for things too, because I feel like you have to acknowledge that that's a possibility. But for me personally, my own after death communications were really startling to me. But one could always argue that those were also caused by me, and they were just psi effects from coming from me. And there's no way to know. I'm personally particularly interested in physical mediumship. That's just my own personal interest.
Right.
And I feel like some of those earlier studies that were done on the physical mediums, at least, you know, as far as I'm concerned, pretty much prove that these things actually happen. I mean, we can't deny the phenomena that can happen in the seance room with some of these mediums. The question is, do they show us, do they therefore mean that we survive death? And it's always the question with all these phenomena.
Yeah, and I would imagine before you started on this journey, you weren't very well versed in that, you know, living agent psi explanation, and that probably you probably said to yourself, "But this is not going to be as easy as I thought."
Exactly, Bob. You're so perceptive. You know, it's so refreshing to talk to you guys because you know the score here. I mean, it's absolutely true. And, you know, I think Stephen Browdy's work, as I say in that book, I mean, is just fabulous. I have so much respect for him. And I can tell you, I thought that his book, Immortal Remains, was just among the very best I'd ever read. But throughout that book, I was sitting there like saying, oh, my God, he's going to, you know, he destroys everything about all the arguments for survival. But then by the time when you get to the end of that book, he comes around on the survival side, basically. And I can't tell you what a sigh of relief I breathed when I got to that last page. So,
right.
Yes, it was really a challenge, and I knew that I had to, you know, include this perspective in my book because it's a valid one. It's not because, oh, God, I'm obligated to, but I really believe in survival, and I'm just going to have to do this, you know. It's really a legitimate argument that he's making, and it needs to be respected and it needs to be dealt with. And I think a lot of times, you know, the sort of true believer survivalist types don't want to deal with that.
Right. And
I don't know if that's true, but I think it's true.
You know, what we're talking about is, you know, a lot of people will argue against the survival explanation because they'll say that information is obtained or picked up through people that are living or through information fields, and you can't always just attribute it to a discarnate, you know, communication. So that battle has been going on forever. But I think that the conclusion that you came to, or that you certainly tried to come to in the book, and the conclusion that many others have spoken quite explicitly, is that when you take the research as a whole, you know, so you can explain away the near-death experiences, and you can explain away the deathbed visions, and you can explain away the mediumship, but when you take all of the evidence collectively, you know, that the survival explanation makes the most sense. It's
right.
Logical, you know.
It seems to be true, yeah.
Yeah.
And there are some specific items of evidence that are really, I mean, you know, most people would agree, and including Stephen Browdy, that they're very hard to explain away through psi. They just really push that argument. And I think one example of that is drop-in communicators, which I find also to be some of the, as Steve Browdy does, to be among the stronger evidence pointing towards the survival
right.
being a reality. Maybe we could, I don't know if we're about to go to a break or what, but we could discuss that a little bit. I find those, there's two cases in my book that I present of, or that other people present of drop-in communicators that are just fascinating and very hard to explain as psi, you know. It's just very
right.
hard to do that. So there are certain gems like that really push the boundaries of the psi argument.
Right, and it goes against the argument, you know, that the medium is reading the mind of the sitter, because neither of them had any knowledge of the drop-in communicators.
Exactly. And also no motivation. And, you know, the interesting thing about the drop-in communicator, too, is that communicator has a motivation for being there that's independent of anybody in the room or the medium. I mean, that's part of, you know, there's certain criteria that you want a good drop-in case to have, and one of those criteria is that there's an actual motivation for that communicator to come in. And there are cases of that where the communicator is actually found to have lived. I mean, that's the one that, anyway, I don't know how much you want to go into it, but
yeah,
the one
well,
that was that came through Indridi Indridason, who's an Icelandic medium, was years later found to have actually lived and been a real person, and the information that he provided about himself through the medium was found to be accurate. So, you know, that's pretty evidential, and he just appeared one day through speaking through this medium, and no one in the room had heard of him or knew him, and gave all the specific information that was later verified. So,
the thing that attracted me to your writing and to your work initially, you know, was the first book about UFOs, even though that's not really in our, you know, realm of ordinary discussion. But what struck me as I read the book was that how difficult it is for the legitimate researchers, that, you know, the obstacles that were put in their place, you know, by the mainstream, despite overwhelming evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was, I noticed a really strong similarity to the survival question, and I'm sure that you that was always in the back of your mind as you did these years of research about survival. It's the same obstacles, just a different subject. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think the UFO obstacles are worse, though, to tell you the truth, because there's this sort of I don't know. I think it's more of a taboo to believe in UFOs than it is to believe that we survive death. UFOs are considered sort of kooky, and I think part of the problem is because there's a lot of UFO people out there who are their own worst enemies, who go around making these claims and sensation, you know, the conspiracy theories, and accusing the government of hiding crash flying saucers and bodies and all this sort of wild, crazy stuff that really taints the seriousness of the field. But I don't think that goes on as much in the survival universe. And I don't think it's quite as taboo. That's my sense. And it's also more universal than the UFO question. So there are some differences. But, yeah, they both challenge current paradigms, that's for sure.
Yeah. I guess another similarity is that you have to put some value to the anecdotal evidence, you know, because I know when you talk about life after death, the anecdotal evidence is the bulk of the evidence. It's overwhelming, you know, going on for centuries. And, the mainstream tends to summarily dismiss that and give it no value at all. But
right, I know.
People keep
but it's true. It's the conglomeration. But I think what I try to do in the book is you know, present cases that have more that are more than anecdotal, that are really evidential.
Oh yeah.
Which isn't to dismiss anecdotal evidence, because certainly even my own experiences that I write about could be considered anecdotal by somebody.
Yeah.
You know, anything that happens to one person when there's no one else around, and they can't quote prove it, is I guess anecdotal.
So what do you think, now that you've examined quite an abundance of the scientific evidence, and you've also had a few personal experiences and talked to others who have had, what do you think is more convincing to somebody that there's life after death, knowing and learning about the science or having a direct personal experience?
I would say probably the latter, but it would, again, depend on the intensity of that experience, you know, what it meant to the person. I mean, I think the ideal is to have both, is to also look at some of those. There's just such fascinating material that one can look at and read about.
Yeah.
And then that gives you more confidence in accepting your own experiences as being valid, because there's a context for them. So maybe it's helpful for the person that has had experiences to know, you know, some of the similar cases that have been studied that might even relate to their own experiences. But
yeah, I think you're
there's nothing like personal experience. I mean, you know that as well, you know.
Right.
Think about the readings that you had, which were so meaningful to you and Fran, as compared to reading about something like that. You know, there's no comparison.
Yeah, I've often said that I think you're exactly right, by the way, in what you said, that you know, the personal experience can be life-changing, but a lot of people they dismiss the personal experience, or they don't even recognize it unless they have some sort of a foundation set by the science, or become familiar that, you know, with a little bit about the research, and they say, okay, this is not woo-woo, this is real, and I'm having these experiences. So,
exactly. I mean, I think and it's very supportive for people, I think, you know, to have that.
Yep.
And I hope that my book, because I think my book is sort of a fusion of personal with, I mean, at least with my own personal experiences, but I also, I mean, there's some anecdotal things that come up in some of the other chapters, but there's also things like when I deal with OBEs, you know, I'm only interested in the cases that are veridical, where a person is able to report back something that they experienced when they left their body that could later be verified. You know,
right.
Those cases are the ones that are more interesting than just somebody telling a story about being out of their body.
Right.
So I do focus on cases like that that are really strong and that have been studied, some of them by psychiatrists and scientists and medical doctors and people like that. So we know that they're valid cases. And it just is like, wow, you know, this is real when you read it.
And the book we're talking about is Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. It's a major book. It's hot off the press. And Wesley Kane is the author, K-E-A-N. The website is survivingdeathkane.com. We go to a break. When we come back, why don't we talk a little bit about your experience with the physical mediumship and delve into that a little bit. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guest tonight is New York Times bestselling author Leslie Kane. Our sponsor is Transitions LLC. We like to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Our next webinar of the year is Anybody in There? Evidence for Survival from Hauntings and Apparitions Research, presented by Dr. Nancy Zingroni on April 5th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle, with the drawing set for Earth Day, April 22nd, is up on our website, just waiting for your entry. You have only a month left to enter and win as many as 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Bobby Allison, Heidi Jaffe, Nancy Marlowe, Ginger Quinlan, or Dustin Livers. It's only $5 to enter, and that $5 goes a long way in providing services to both the bereaved and the curious. And just as a reminder to everybody, as of this date, only 50 people have entered this raffle. So you do the math and see what the odds are, and then go on the website and buy as many chances as you possibly can. Our annual grief retreat has been open for super early bird registration on the website, but that will end on March 31st. We do recommend booking early, as last year the rooms at the retreat filled and some attendees had to stay off premises. If you're booking early, please keep in mind our no refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, 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 help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, great nonprofits, and WellZoo. Lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Leslie Kane, the author of Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. Before the break, we mentioned physical mediumship. Most people, especially in our audience, are familiar with mental mediumship, not so much physical mediumship. And as part of your research, you sat with some physical mediums. So let's get into that a little bit. I mean, maybe you could tell our audience what a physical medium is and the circumstances of how you had a sitting with the medium.
Okay, well, physical mediumship, there's three. After mental mediumship, there's trance mediumship, which was these figures like Mrs. Piper and Mrs. Leonard, where they go into a trance state and the control personalities will speak through them, but there's no physical phenomena that occur. With physical mediumship, the medium is in a deep trance in which he or she will basically depart their body, and a spirit control will enter the medium's body and speak through them. And while that is happening, a lot of physical phenomena can occur in the room. And things like levitations, materializations, lights can fly around the room that are created somehow. It's like this magic world in which all the laws of the material world that we're familiar with are basically defied, and these phenomenal things happen. And of course, they're in the heyday of mediumship in the 1920s, or 10s, 20s, 30s. There were many fraudulent mediums that were, uncovered, and mediumship, sort of physical mediumship, was sort of got a bad rap through all of that. But there were also some genuine physical mediums who were well studied by scientists, and their phenomena were documented, and the controls that were placed on them and the space in which they performed these things was extremely rigorously controlled by these scientists who were studying them, so that the phenomena could be documented as genuine. That's basically physical mediumship in a nutshell. I mean, every medium will do different kinds of things, but the emphasis is on the physical phenomena, and the spirit people who are speaking through the medium state that that's their way of demonstrating the reality of survival, that they're coming from this other world, and they're able to show through these miraculous things that they can do that we survive death. That's how they see it.
So, and one of the physical mediums that you sat with was Stuart Alexander. So you were with him in a seance type of setting with other participants?
Yeah, I mean, he works in the UK, and he's been working with a small circle, what they call a circle, group of people for about 30, 40 years, kind of privately. And I was invited to come sit with this group. The first sitting I went to, I think there was only maybe three or four other people in the room besides me and Stuart. And before I wrote the book, I sat with the group four different times and, was able to inspect the room and do all the things that one would do to make sure that everything was legitimate. And I write about it in the book. I mean, I experienced some very wondrous things there. And you just, it just challenges your whole sense of reality to see these things.
Yeah.
It's very hard to describe. It's hard to take out of context. And when I wrote the book, I tried to sort of walk the reader through a series of studies and a series of different events that have occurred in mediumship, so that by the time they get to my experience, my description of what I saw, it doesn't seem too crazy, you know.
Yeah.
It's just very mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But, there have been studies, rigorously controlled studies, where scientists have been able to document, for instance, the materialization of hands, for instance, with the famous media Eusebia Palladino and other mediums that were, absolutely rigorously controlled up, just as extremely as you could ever want, and studied by skeptics who were set out to expose them as frauds, but came around to write these lengthy papers about the genuineness of the phenomena. And so I sort of focus on these materialization of hands in different contexts, and then, because that's one of the things that I witnessed with Stuart Alexander, which was so extraordinary. And not only did I witness the materialization of a hand, but I actually touched it and held it. So it sounds too hard to believe, but I think if you read the book, you'll sort of see why it's maybe not as hard to believe as when I just talk about it like this out of context.
Right. And you're right. I mean, you went through all the evidence and you went through the history. And then, as you mentioned, some of these physical mediums back in the late 1800s and early 1900s were subjected to controls by Nobel Prize winners and leaders in the scientific community. So people that are not easily duped, and they were doing things to the medium that were almost barbaric,
Exactly. I mean, and the mediums are willing to accept it. Absolutely. I mean, they were just heroic in that sense.
Yeah.
And
so
one of them being Franek Kluski, just, briefly.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually made these molds, which it's one of my favorite things to have discovered in this process with these, this medium named Kluski, who was Polish, and in the 1920s he was studied rigorously by, as you said, a Nobel Prize winning physician and another doctor, and they they were basically able to ask these materialized beings to put their hands into hot wax, and then they formed these gloves, that the only way you could get out of these gloves was to dematerialize your hand, because there was no seams on them or anything. And they collected all these, anyway, it's a description of they actually were able to see these things happening, and then the gloves would be dropped, and then they made these plaster molds from them, and they have this record of these materialized hands, and some of them were child size, which is so interesting. They looked like adult hands, but they were smaller than a normal hand. There's just no way you can explain away these, and this is a record of this actual phenomenon of materialization that we have. So,
yeah,
there's
you have
cases like that.
You have photos of these gloves and hands in your book that they used. They were molded out of, I guess, hot wax or something.
Right. I just find them fascinating, fascinating, and they're real evidence. I mean, they're absolute concrete evidence of the reality of a materialization. There's absolutely no way around that conclusion.
Right. So
you read
when
the book written by the scientists who did the studies and the controls that they had, and they put, you know, they snuck colors into the wax that nobody in the sitting room knew was even there, so to make sure that nobody was bringing in it. I mean, they just covered every base you could want them to cover to be sure that nobody could accuse them of anything. And it's just, it's like solid evidence that we have.
So when you're
go ahead.
In the seance, and these things start happening, levitations, movements of objects, and so forth. Your initial reaction, was it that there was true spirit involvement? Did you think maybe it was the energy from the medium or the energy of, you know, the collected energy of the people in the group that were making these things happen? I mean,
it's so hard to know. I mean, my sense with Stuart Alexander, and I think every medium is different. But I've sat with him more times now than I did. I actually had another sitting with him just this week, you know, after having written the book. But in that context, it seems really that it is the spirit people, what he calls the spirit people. There's a group of them that speak through him that seem to be creating these things, and the energy that they need to work with is partly the energy from the sitters, but. It's not that the sitters are creating the phenomena. It's that the control spirits, whatever you want to call them, the spirit people, are utilizing the energy from the sitters to create the phenomena that they're creating. And they work with a substance called ectoplasm, which, you know, people probably think is totally nuts. But it's, again, I try to prevent that topic as well in my book in a sense that will lead people up to understanding it. But so the energy that from the sitters is really important, but I feel with Stuart Alexander, that's not what creates the phenomena. I mean, that's just my interpretation of it. And I know that people like Stephen Browdy will have the hypothesis that these physical manifestations, even materializations, can be created by just simply the sitters and the medium. But I just find that very difficult to accept, and especially in the context of having sat with Stuart. There may be other mediums where it seems more that way than it does with him, but everyone's different.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, now that you've done all the research and the book is out, do you contemplate if people would live their lives differently if survival of consciousness were proven?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, you've probably thought about it more than I have. I was going to wonder what your opinion is. I just don't know. Would it make people feel differently? I mean, I don't know. I'm overwhelmed by that question. I mean, how would it change the world if everybody believed in survival? That's the question.
Well, I think that what goes along with it is if you believe in life after death, and if you believe that your actions in the physical affect your continued existence in the non-physical, then that would make a big difference.
If you believe that your actions would have an effect.
Right.
Yeah, that's the question.
But if you don't.
You know,
Yeah, it's one of the things.
In that sense, it should have a big effect. But you know, there are whole cultures, like in India, they all believe in reincarnation. It's just like a fact for people in India, but I don't know how much it affects the quality of their lives, in the sense that you're asking. I mean, there are cultures where it's accepted, and there's still all kinds of crime and horrible things that go on with people's lives.
All right, I think everybody to find out more of the big answers to the big questions. Recommend you get a copy of Surviving Death. It's written by Leslie Kane. There is a link on our website or in the email you just received to Amazon to purchase the book. The website is survivingdeathkane.com. Leslie, thanks so much for being with us again. And I know you'll be doing a webinar in the webinar series. I don't have the exact date.
Yeah, I think it's in June, as I recall.
Look forward to that.
Me
Thank
too.
You. Best of luck with the book. I hope everybody goes out and buys it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks, Bob and Fran.
Good night.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Alex Hanna, Veronica James, Rich LeBlay, Lauren Ramnath, Vince Mattia, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, James Rafferty, Donna Mello, Stanley Mueller, Marian Pierschka, Glenna Irwin, David Haith, Michael Tim, Helen Montalto, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Ingram, Linda Bonventry, Linda Ellis, Grayson Keene, Maverick Keene, Eddie, and Sandy Rabel. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.